Black Power's Gonna Get Your Mama, the title of a new book by tonight's guest, Black Militant Julius Lester. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. We welcome WTMJ in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to our Night Call network. Last night, the Columbia Broadcasting System concluded its seven-part series of Black America with the results of its privately commissioned poll on American racial attitudes. Some of its very interesting conclusions were: only 35 to 40 million white Americans qualify as racists by the dictionary definition. 9 out of 10 black Americans oppose violent action to achieve equality. And only 6% of those black Americans polled agree with the views of Stokely Carmichael, while 53%, more than half, agree with the nonviolent position of the Reverend Ralph Abernathy. Our guest tonight is in the mold of Stokely Carmichael and H. Rapp Brown. Julius Lester is 29 years old, a field secretary with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and author of a new book, Look Out, Whitey, Black Power's Gonna Get Your Mama. We'd like tonight to run our own somewhat unscientific poll on racial attitudes as Mr. Lester answers your direct questions in New York. When you call in, if you're black, tell us whose views in the black leadership community are the ones with which you identify. If you're white, tell us what you think of black Americans. We'll keep a running tally and see what we end up with at the end of the show. As I said, somewhat unscientific, but it should prove interesting. You may talk to Mr. Julian Lester at our national number, which is area code 212-749-3311, and you may call Collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. In the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's local calls only, please, on 866-5010. We also now have a special Western regional number, which our listeners on the West Coast and in Texas, as well as Colorado, will hear when their stations identify themselves when their stations are doing the 15-minute breaks. Mr. Lester, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
So happy to have you with us.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
Could you first begin by explaining the title of your book, Look Out, Whitey, Black Power's Gonna Get Your Mama?
Well, I mean, the title is very simply Playing the Dozens. And for those who don't know what the dozens is, it's sort of a verbal word game which came over with black people from Africa, where you talk about each other's mama, and it's a sort of way of exercising your verbal skills. I mean, who can talk about whose mama the worst? And so the title, very simply, was to say, you know, hey, black folks, here's a book for you. And not a book that was written by a black man directed toward, you know, white people.
Has there been much strong reaction to the title of the book?
Yeah, black people dig it. They really crack up. You know, they really, it just makes them feel real good. And, of course, a lot of whites, you know, some whites dig it, and other whites get very, very uptight about it.
But in actuality, the book is quite a telling portrait of what SNCC has done throughout the years of its existence. And I'd like to delve in that for just a few moments. First, as I gathered from the reading that we did of the book early this afternoon, is that the SNCC organization has been greatly responsible for some of the more important work done in the area of civil rights. How do you equate the work that SNCC did in its early years as opposed to its present position?
Well, see, I see SNCC's present position as simply being a logical progression from what it did in the early years. I mean, SNCC was organized in 1960, about 3 months after the sit-in started. And SNCC has always been concerned with, I think, the very basic question, which is how do black people in this country achieve dignity as human beings? Okay, the first thing which was done was the sit-ins to knock down in the South those visible signs of segregation which said to you very, very openly that you are inferior, that you are less than human. once that was done, beginning in late 61 and early 62, moved into the area of voting rights, and particularly in the state of Mississippi, where black people comprise almost 50% of the population, and began working on voter registration and going through all of which they went through, you know, involved in organizing people around that. And the second principle involved in this was, of course, which is the very basic one of organizing people to not accept, well, how can I put it, to organize people so that they know that they themselves can solve their own problems. Then the next phase in this was, in 1964, was the organizing of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which went to the Atlantic City Convention, Democratic Convention that year, and tried to be seated in place of the all-white Mississippi delegation of James Eastland and the other races in Mississippi. And that failed. SNCC learned from that you couldn't expect to achieve what you were after through the party, which was responsible in part for your condition. So in the following years, SNCC started moving to organize all black political parties in the South, called Black Panther parties. And then in 1966, SNCC came out with the position of black power. And so it seems to me that SNCC has just moved very, very logically, uncovering layer after layer after layer, showing that there is no redress of grievances under the system in this country. And so therefore, what you finally come to is just standing in total and absolute opposition to that system.
Mr. Lester, we already have calls coming in from our night call listeners, and we'll go to them immediately. We'll take our first call from St. Louis, Missouri. Mr. Ralph Jacobus is our hearing night call over KMOX FM. Mr. Jacobus, good evening, sir.
Hello.
Your question, sir.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
Mr. Shields?
Yes, sir.
Ralph Jacobus.
How are you, sir?
I have some statements, no questions.
All right.
I'm president of the Wellston Chamber of Commerce. I've been in this civil rights situation because of the fact that we are a business community, a business organization in the ghetto, in two communities, Wellston and the city of St. Louis. May I follow up with my statement, sir?
Go right ahead, sir.
Number one, black and white America must resolve their differences or America is at the crossroads of being torn apart. Number two, it must be done at the grassroots level. Number three, we have to seek each other's mutual good as equal under the law of God and man. Number four, we have to mutually fight crime in the streets. Number five, the affluent individual citizen in suburbia or the inner city has to individually and collectively help the poor and oppressed on a man-to-man and family-to-family basis, regardless of race, color, and creed. Number six, white suburbia can no longer sit back and stay contained in a false sense of isolation with a false feeling of security. White suburbia must involve itself in the internal security of the inner city by active programs and participation. In conclusion, sir, if this total action is not taken on a mutual basis at the grassroots level, if racism, white or black, is not erased from the American sea, then we will remain in very deep and perilous trouble. This is all I have to say, Dell.
All right. Would you care for Mr. Lester to respond, sir?
Yes, I would.
Mr. Lester?
Well, I feel that while the statement is, you know, has the best of motives and is very definitely well-intentioned, I feel that it doesn't recognize what I consider some very simple facts, which are that, number one, I don't see how black people can achieve freedom under the system that has enslaved them. That it is because of the nature of the business community in this country the principles under which they operate, that black people were, number one, brought to this country from Africa and have continued to be semi-slaves ever since emancipation. And while there are, you know, stopgap measures which can be taken to alleviate very glaring problems, such as, for one, ghetto housing, I don't think that in the long range they are going to solve the problems which face not only black people, but all poor people in this country. I mean, it's a great contradiction to my mind that the wealthiest nation in the world should also have such a wide range of very rich and very poor people. I mean, we are a nation capable of everybody leading a good life and having their physical needs satisfied, and yet the system is incapable of performing this very simple job.
Well, Mr. Lester, Mr. Jacobus calls in and he gives us 6 or 7 statements in reference to what he feels must be done in America, and you have stated that his statements are well-intentioned, but I'm going back to your book now where you say that it is clear that America as it now exists must be destroyed, so therefore you are not in agreement with the system as it is now. Now, here we have one man who feels that something can be done, and he is well-intentioned, and we have another man who feels that the system cannot exist at all. Now, where do we go?
Well, you see, I think that, you know, where we go is he goes in his direction, and I go in my direction, because you know, if, you know, he, through his programs and his organizations, can provide several thousand units of housing, you know, that will improve the conditions that black people in St. Louis live under, St. Louis is where I was born, then I'm all for that. But that's not going to solve the problems of the 30 million black people in this country. It's not going to solve the problems of the enormous Spanish-speaking population in this country. It's not going to solve the problems of the poor whites living in this country.
Well, how do you feel, Mr. Jacobus?
Those 2,000 people, and that's good.
How do you feel, Mr. Jacobus?
Well, sir, I'm in sympathy with this gentleman's viewpoints on this matter. I'm in partial agreement with him. However, I think there is a breakdown in communications between the underprivileged and the privileged. I think a great deal of this, sir, is apathy on the part of my white brothers and some apathy on the part of my black brothers. I think we need more man-to-man, family-to-family, personal communication so that we can understand each other. We have grown apart. And I think this is because of mutual fear of each other. And I am optimistic enough to believe in my fellow man, whether he be black or white. I have arrived at the point for this gentleman's information where I do not see whether a man has a black skin or a white skin. I have often said that a lot of us white people, we spend the summer trying to get tanned. And I am in agreement with the point that black is beautiful, white is beautiful, green is beautiful, pink is beautiful. I would like to urge this gentleman to turn to his Bible. Christ is the answer to this problem, and the book of Matthew and the parables and the Beatitudes gives every man in these United States, in this world, the answer to the solution of our problem, sir.
Well, sir, may I ask this question? According to the CBS survey last night, and we're not at all going to say that it was that accurate, but for lack of other figures, when they state that 35 to 40 million white Americans qualify as racist in this country, how can we go to the Bible on that?
This is a matter of long education over the years, sir. I myself, I am 59 years of age. There was a time in my life, sir, when I regret to say that I was just as prejudiced as the next person. But through my contact with the black community, and through my contact with good friends like Harold Scott of the Wellston Gateway Center, Clyde Cahill, who is the chief of the Human Development Corporation of St. Louis, through tramping the streets of 6 years in the ghetto, I have formed a different viewpoint. And many of our other white brothers, which are brothers of you, have different viewpoints. I'm on the board of directors of the Greeley Community House, which is run by our Presbyterian Church. It's our Presbyterian Church that has been doing a great deal in this racist situation. We will continue to do so.
Mr. Jacobus, thank you so much for calling, sir.
We want to
Mr. Jacobus,
solve these problems, sir.
Thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to Mr. Julius Lester and the author of the book, Look Out, Whitey, Black Power's Gonna Get Your Mama, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Julius Lester after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Julius Lester about Black Power. Again, Del Shields.
And Mrs. Mercer is standing by, our hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM, and she's calling in from Forest Hills, New York. Mrs. Mercer, good evening.
Good evening, Del.
How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Lester.
Good evening.
This is a rhetorical question, I'm sure, but have you read the autobiography of Malcolm X?
Yes, I have.
Yes, I'm sure you have, and I have also. Toward the end of the book, he discusses at some length how he more or less had to undergo a kind of a transformation in attitude toward white people. Not white people collectively, of course, but individual whites after his trip to Mecca.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, he wrote a very moving letter to his sister about this, and he anticipated a great deal of anger and hostility from many black people at this change of attitude. Now, my reason for asking you is this. Recently, well, relatively recently, both Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown were married. Now, in each case, they married a black woman, which is hardly surprising. If one or both of these powerful and eloquent spokesman for black power had married a white person, do you think that this would destroy their credibility as spokesman for black power?
Well, you see, to me personally, it would not have destroyed their credibility. However, you know, I do know that there was some reaction from one particular black publication, which I won't name because Rap was married by a white minister. And, see, I think this comes about through, well, a phase of the Black Power Movement, which I think is coming to an end, which was in this initial phase, I think it was necessary to express all of the 400 years of hostility that we felt toward
people are not the enemy.
Necessarily the enemy.
Right.
Put it that
okay,
way.
It may be necessary, you know, I mean, it may come down in this country to an out-and-out race war. I mean, that would be unfortunate. But if people, I mean, if that's the way it's going to come down, it's going to come down that way. You're going to have to choose sides. But that a lot of us need to recognize that white people are as much victims of the system as black people are. And that what I personally am very concerned about now is getting white people to realize that they are victims, that they are enslaved by the system in a different way than I am, but nonetheless they are slaves, and that we do indeed, you know, have a common enemy.
Yes, well, this, of course, is a paradox, I suppose, because very recently the situation was reversed. I suppose you might say that the black person would be a political impediment to the white partner in the relationship, but now I see so many cases where people have a terrible personal dilemma because they know that as far as their, I guess you have to use the word following in quotes, as far as their following is concerned, this sort of thing would be a betrayal. And yet they personally are sophisticated enough to be able to make this kind of a personal choice.
Yeah, right.
So I'm very heartened to hear you say that you think this kind of thing is coming to an end.
Yeah, at the same time, you know, let me say that, you know, when I say what I've just said, I'm not talking about, I'm not saying that integration is coming back into play because it isn't.
Well, of course, I'm not even saying integration per se, because that to me means something very different and often a rather insidious form of brainwashing, again, by the white community.
Right. I mean, the emphasis is going to remain, you know, upon, you know, blacks organizing blacks in the black community, but I think there's going to be much more of a push toward getting whites to organize radical whites inside the white community.
Yes, because as a white, I guess I might characterize myself as radical, although I've never really been very self-conscious about it. I found when I have gone out into the community that on many, many issues, I am more black than the so-called Negroes present, if you understand the distinction
yeah,
I'm trying to make.
Right.
And it's a rather ironic situation, you know, when you see things this way, you realize how much more closely you are allied emotionally and philosophically.
Right.
To the black power advocates, and yet because of your white skin, it would seem a contradiction to some people, and yet, of course, it's not a contradiction at all.
Right.
So perhaps we should have three countries rather than two, you know, one for the whites, one for the blacks, and a third for people who like living together. That might solve the problem.
Well, okay.
Or just a small state I'll settle for, you know. Rhode
Mrs. Mercer, thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. This is NYCALL in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. And remember, we welcome your calls, collect, and we welcome your comments, as well as your conversations tonight with Julius Lester, a field secretary with SNCC, and the author of Lookout Whitey, Black Power's Gonna Get Your Mama. By the way, we'd also like to hear from you tonight, because we're taking kind of a straw poll tonight to find out where your views are in terms of black power. So if you call us, we certainly like to hear from you. We'll take our next call from Philadelphia. Mr. Mark is hearing NYCALL over WHAT. Mr. Mark, good evening, sir.
Hello, Bill. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
So nice to hear from Philadelphia.
Well, okay. First, I follow the philosophies of Malcolm X and Stokely Carmichael. And what I want to say about the program last night, the majority of the people they were speaking to were the old people, and these are not the people who are going to cause the revolution. It's going to be the young blacks.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I would like to ask Mr. Lester, what does he think about that?
Well, I agree with you very definitely. See, I think the one thing that is happening in the country is that things are not shaping up so much as black against white as it is young against old.
Right. Uh-huh.
And that you got in this country, you know, several hundred thousand of young white kids who are ready to tear the country down.
Right.
And that this is very, very significant.
Right. So in other words, I mean, it's a shame to say it, but our black relatives' ideas are slowly dying out. In other words, like, what they have been trying to do for the last 100 years is not working, you know. So in other words, they need a change, you know. Now, I would hate to see a revolution, you know. But then again, I would
rather do it now and have things better off for my children.
Right.
You know?
Very definitely.
So,
Mr. Mark, may I ask your age?
Beg your pardon?
May I ask your age?
27.
You're considered young. You're not an old man.
Well, I mean, in 30s, yeah.
What? Well, 2 years younger. But the reason I asked about your age, you mentioned that last night we had talked to a number of people, and most of them were the older people, and we should be hearing more from the youth.
Right.
Now, what kind of changes would you like to see when we talk about the system?
In the first place, I just don't think that the white and the blacks will ever make it, because they've been trying for so long, you know. And I tried to explain this to my mother, you know, but she's, you know, with this idea of prayer would change things. Well, I can't go for this so much either, because, like, our forefathers knew nothing about the Christian Bible. You understand what I'm saying? So, in other words, like, I actually don't think that we should actually follow this Bible, because it's really not benefiting us any.
And that's the change that you'd like to see, that we would stop following the Bible.
Well, I mean, let the young people speak, because the majority of the time, they will put the old people on television, and then they'll say, well, this is the idea of the majority of the blacks, and this is not the ruling class now. It's the youth that you must look out for. These are the people who will cause the revolution, and there must be a revolution.
Well, Mr. Lester, can we say that the young people of America today do not intend to compromise at all, that what they're going to ask for is a total and complete change, and they will settle for nothing less?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it seems to me, that, those of us who are young, you know, just see very, very clearly that what have we got to lose, that we don't have anything now. I mean, the young white kids have looked at their parents and said very definitely they do not want to follow in the footsteps of their parents into those jive jobs and put the suburbs and those sterile lives, and they just won't go that way. And young blacks have said, you know, boom, I'm not taking any more, period. And that if all I can do is bring it down, then that's something. I'll bring it down.
What was your feeling, Mr. Lester, about the young people who became involved with Senator McCarthy?
Well, I mean, my feeling about them was that, you know, here were some very, very concerned and upset young people who had faith in the system, and so therefore were following a man who had a solution within the system. Now, what I'm going to be very interested to follow is what they are going to do now that Senator McCarthy has lost, now that, you know, they were among those who got beat up by the police in Chicago. I was in Chicago covering the demonstrations and the convention there, and a lot of the McCarthy young kids, you know, were lumped together with the anti-war demonstrations and got their heads whooped. And so I don't put them down, you know, until they decide which side they're going to be on. And then if they decide that the answers are within the system, then, of course, as far as I'm concerned, they are on the side which is opposed to me.
Mr. Mark, what is your feeling about the young people?
Well, I don't deal in politics at all, you know, because actually I don't think they're actually benefiting the black man, you know, because actually we have very little to show for it. So therefore, I don't vote at all, you know.
You do not vote at all?
No, I've never voted.
I see. All right, sir, thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. Our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311, and we'll return to our guest tonight, Mr. Julius Lester, who is calling in from New York right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Julius Lester after station identification. America is growing smaller. Speed of communication, speed of travel, and a worldwide revolution in human rights. These things bind us together into a common destiny. One man's problem is every man's problem. More and more we realize the only real problem is the human problem. People who need jobs, better education, better places to live, better medical care, and better hope for the future. a chance to become part of the American dream of freedom and opportunity. But for the American dream to succeed, each of us must be responsive to the needs of others, to give a damn about our brother or our sister, black or white. You'll find some answers to how you can help give a damn, how you can offer your help, in a new booklet called Whose Crisis? Yours. You can get a copy without charge by writing to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Julius Lester about Black Power. Again, Del Shields.
And we welcome the stations who join us every night for the second half hour of Night Call. And tonight, besides talking with Mr. Julius Lester, we're also conducting a kind of an unscientific poll, but we're very interested in your reaction. And if you're black tonight, we'd like for you to tell us your views on black leadership in the community when you call, as to which black leader you identify with. And if you're white, we'd like for you to tell us what you think of black Americans. So if you'd like to kind of add your voice or add your vote to our straw poll tonight, you be sure to call us. That's area code 212-749-3311. Mr. Lester, we'll take our next call from Austin, Texas. Mr. Steelman is hearing Night Call over KUT-FM. Mr. Steelman, good evening, sir.
Hello. I have a couple of questions here. In the first place, I'd like to say that as a white American, I tend to support black power in the sense that I felt that one of the big problems that the black community has had for many years has been sort of a lack of any real racial heritage or a sense of a racial heritage. I think this has been a bad thing. But I would like to know, Mr. Lester here has been speaking quite a bit on changing the system. In the first place, I'd like to find out what specific changes or what are the specific elements which he favors in a new system. In the second place, I'd like to find out what practical steps he considers would be efficacious in implementing this.
Well, to take the second part of I'll take the first part of it first. The changes that I would like to see in the system come, I guess, number one, in the area of economics, where we have a system which is based upon one man profiting from the labor of another man. So therefore, what we have in this country, to my mind, is a highly sophisticated system of sharecropping, where people are paid wages, you know, undoubtedly good wages in some instances, but nonetheless, the lion's share of the money earned goes to the people who own the particular company involved. And that changes that I would like to see in that area would be where it would not be possible for one individual or a group of individuals to profit from the labor of other individuals, but that profits made from, you know, whatever company or concern is involved go directly into the community through some sort of, how can I put it? Well, community organizations, to put it, you know, very, very loosely. I think that to really understand what I'm saying, I think that we have to understand that there are certain ideas and attitudes which are inculcated, you know, into the system. And I'll try to explain as quickly as possible what I mean. That I believe that America is built up on principles of inhumanity. That this is a country that was founded upon the enslavement of African people. This was a country where people came from Europe seeking religious freedom, and then when they got here, they became as intolerant religious and in terms of religion as the thing they had fled from in England. It's a country where a person has to pay to get well. And if a person does not have the funds to pay, then he many times remains ill, and in more instances than I realize, he dies. This is inculcated, you know, in such slogans that you see around the country, such as, I fight poverty, I work, which, you know, is an attitude which has no understanding, shows no recognition of the fact that it is quite oftentimes not possible for those millions of individuals who want to work to get jobs to work. And so, you know, when I talk about a basic change, I'm talking about something which I definitely can't outline in, you know, 3 minutes or 5 minutes, but I'm talking about something that will hit and that will destroy these attitudes inside this country, these attitudes that will allow this country to even develop a weapon like the atomic bomb. You see, to even bring it into creation is the crime. To use it is only the next logical step. To even be able to, when a person thinks that napalm is possible, he should be so filled with horror that he will, you know, try to wash it out of his mind completely. But no, it's very logical. Oh, napalm, you do this, oh yeah, and then it's manufactured, and boom, it's dropped on people. And this is, you know, like when people talk about America being a sick society, this is what I think of, that we are anti-human beings. We are anti-life in this country. To even live with the ghettos existing in this country for 1 second is a testament to human callousness that, to my mind, is, you know, unknown in the history of man, that people should be forced to live like black people are forced to live in this country. And then after how, you know, you get rid of all of this, you know, I feel that the only way it's going to be gotten rid of is through violence. And, you know, I take as the most recent example of why the violence is going to be necessary. Let me say very specifically that if it could be gotten rid of without the use of violence, you know, then I definitely am all for it. I'm not hung up on, you know, violence at all and blood and all that kind of thing. But that, you know, that if you look at Chicago and what happened there, where you had 3,000 demonstrators who came, who, you know, asked for permission to do everything they wanted to do, did not receive that permission, remained peaceful in what they were doing, and then were unmercifully clubbed by the police. Then, of course, there were a lot of kids who were there demonstrating who learned a lesson which we learned in the nonviolent movement, that you're going to have to start fighting back at some point. And that if you can't change a man through reason, you can't change him through using petitions, you can't change him through prayer, then you're going to have to change him through the gun.
All right, now, one final question here, if I may ask it. Black people in this country, as you're aware and as I'm aware, and I guess everyone is aware, are a minority. You constitute, what, 23% of the population? Maybe
well, something like 11 or 12%.
Oh, okay, well, not quite as much as I thought then. Fine. Okay, considering that most of the violent power, let's say, in this country is in the hands of such agencies as police departments, or when you get right down to the nitty-gritty in the average white or black American who can fight, how do you expect to be able to change this system through violence?
Well, all I can say is watch us.
All right.
You know, I'm not giving away any state secrets or anything, but all I can say is watch us. And you know, like one thing which I look to, which gives me a lot of ideas, is in a country called Vietnam, where some people who started off with World War II weapons have fought the world's greatest military power to a standstill.
Okay, well,
Mr. Stillman, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number, and of course we welcome your calls tonight. And you can talk direct to Mr. Julius Lester. We'll take our next call from Nashville, Tennessee. Mr. Cameron is hearing Night Call over WVOL. Mr. Cameron, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Bill.
Yes, sir.
I would like to ask you a question about a definition. Will he give me a definition of black power? I've read several of his articles in the Guardian newspaper, the Radical Weekly that comes out. And I would like for Julius to give me and the black people of this country a definition. What does he mean by black power?
Okay, well, that's in part what the book is about, but I'll try, briefly.
All right.
That I think that black power means several things. On one level, first level, let's take is the cultural level, where it means a very simply coming back home and knowing yourself, from your racial roots and
yeah.
Knowing where you came from and thereby knowing who you are. And I think that one of the most visible aspects of the Black Power movement to date has been in the phenomena that's been called cultural nationalism, where we now say black instead of Negro, and where we're proud of ourselves, and that, we begin to realize that we aren't ugly. It's on that, that's on the level of being able to define ourselves. Okay.
I would like to ask another question here, and I read one of your articles, it was several months ago, where you said that we as, the extremists and your militants, we have to get away from the rhetoric.
Right.
We have to go into our thing as far as getting ourselves together.
Right.
And I would like for you to outline or tell the black youth of this country what we really can do if we're going to bring about a change in this society.
Okay, well, see, I think that, the first thing I can do, the first thing which we can do, which fits in with, the other aspects of the definition of black power, is that you got to understand that revolution is a battle of the mind, is a battle for the mind, number one. That whoever wins the battle for the mind has won, because the body will follow the mind. Okay, we have in this country, because we grow up in this country,
right.
We're propagandized and brainwashed by this country. So therefore, you have a lot of black people walking around who have the same values that the majority of the white people in this country have, who will stab their own brother in the back to make a buck.
Right.
So the first thing that we have to do is to recognize and begin to learn just what it is this country is, just what it is this country does to people, so that we can begin to understand what the alternative to this can be. So therefore, for example, I've been in a situation, I'm pretty sure you've been in a situation where you've been evicted because you couldn't pay the rent. So therefore, we got to stop and think, well, a man has the right to a roof over his head. So therefore, in this new society we're talking about, then we won't have any rent. Now, a lot of black folks will oppose that. And that we got to convince those black folks that a man has a right to a roof over his head, a man got a right to eat 3 meals a day, and he got a right to be warm in the wintertime and cool in the summertime.
Right.
And, this sounds, this to me is just plain or ordinary common sense. But then you start talking to a lot of those black people out there who will fight you on this. And so this I see, right now as being one of the primary battles. The second thing is to get, black people to see that they not only have the right to self-defense, they have the obligation to defend themselves. That it's time that black people started policing their own neighborhoods and getting those cracker cops out of the neighborhood who will do anything to the women in the community and do anything to the men in the community.
Yeah.
And that we can take care of those communities ourselves, including setting up our own courts. Because we know the people. We know why John got drunk, beat up his old lady. Maybe John don't deserve 30 days in the drunk tank. Because we know John.
So, I mean, we got to start moving to really organize and solidify our communities. Got to start running out the dope that's in the community, all the narcotics catches in that. They're selling all that poison to our people. Got to start running them liquor stores out of there, because as long as you on that liquor, bad. I ain't talking about a little nip now and then, but, you know, hitting that bottle all the time. You can't get your people together.
Mr. And Cameron?
That's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Thank you so much for calling, sir.
All right, sir.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Julius Lester, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Julius Lester after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, why do some ex-cons make it to a useful life in society and others don't? Do we need prison reform and what kind? How can we make sure more ex-convicts are rehabilitated? These are some of the questions you should ask direct of Kenny Jackson of the Fortune Society. Mr. Jackson served 6 years in the penitentiary and is a spokesman for an organization started and run by ex-convicts who want to tell the public about the changes they say must be made in the way we run our prisons and the way we treat our ex-convicts. There are more than 200,000 convicts in our state and federal prisons today, and most of these men will eventually finish their terms and enter a society not prepared for them, just as they are not prepared for it. Speak for yourself direct to ex-convict Kenny Jackson of the Fortune Society. Tomorrow night on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Julius Lester about Black Power. Again, Del Shields.
Mr. Lester, as you were talking to Mr. Cameron from Nashville, I just would like to pass on this comment. We have heard from many guests we've had on Night Call stressing and amplifying their views about self-defense in the black communities, but this is the first time we've had the extensive kind of amplification that you've given tonight in terms of black people being able to police themselves completely in an area. Most of the times when we have heard about black defense in the communities, it has only been generally projected along the lines of against the police. But I was wondering if you could go just a bit further in this area as to what black people could do under the new system as such if they were able to police their own areas.
Well, see, under the, I wasn't talking about policing under the new system. I was talking about policing under the present system.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, that maybe makes it better.
Right. Because, you see, I just think that, that, you know, the people who live in a community can do a better job of policing themselves than people who don't live in that community. Because if you have, say, a civilian patrol, then he knows that he's not going to use his club against so-and-so, so-and-so, because he knows so-and-so, so-and-so's brother and sister and mother, and he'll just handle the situation completely differently. Even, you know, say if, okay, you know, a compromise with that would be if the city police force would hire, you know, people in the community to police that community, then that person knows that when he gets off work, he's going to go down the street. He's not going to catch the subway or the bus and go to another borough to his community to live, that he lives where he works. And so therefore, he's going to be a much more humane policeman than somebody who lives, you know, 10 miles away from that community.
Mr. Lester, we'll take our next call right here from New York. Mr. Garst is hearing Night Call over WWRL. Mr. Garst, good evening, sir.
Good evening. I wanted to say on your unscientific poll, first of all, that I'm a member of the New York Peace and Freedom Party, and I hope that places me somewhere on your scale, you know, toward the certain end of poll.
All right, we thank you.
And that gets me into what I wanted to ask Mr. Lester. First of all, as Peace and Freedom, we're working in a coalition with the Black Panther Party in Oakland, and part of the 10 points of the Black Panthers is exactly what he's just been talking about in terms of community self-defense. And the second thing, last night I think Mr. Nathan Wright was on.
Yes, sir.
Reporting on the results of the Black Power Conference.
Right.
And what I wanted to ask Mr. Lester, I don't know if he heard that or heard what Mr. Wright was talking about.
No, I didn't.
In terms of what the recommendation of the Black Power Conference was in voting in the presidential election this year. And as nearly as I understood Mr. Wright, he said, don't vote. And I didn't quite dig that because for so many years, most people, most black people and people in the ghettos generally, including poor whites, haven't even registered. And they don't score on the man's scoreboard, you dig?
Well, I think what Dr. Wright was stressing to us was the fact that this was the one year that black people have decided that they would not allow the Democratic Party or the Republican Party to feel, I suppose, specifically rather the Democratic Party, which has gone on for years and feeling that they've always had the black vote no matter what happened, because the Democratic Party allegedly has always been the lesser of the two evils. And it was felt by the Black Power Conference that this year that there would be no such thing as the lesser of two evils, that the only way that you could make the voices or make the black voices felt would be not voting, so that in this way they would not be able to depend upon that 10% vote, which might be able to turn the tide.
Yeah, well, I got that much. But, of course, as a member of the Peace and Freedom Party, I would say, you know, where you've got Eldridge Cleaver on the ballot, and he will be in about 25 or more states, you've got a real choice. And if you're in a state where that choice is not available, then it would seem to me to make sense to play the man's game to the extent of getting registered and going in and casting a blank ballot.
Yeah, well, you see...
Did you see the point?
Well, you see the whole question.
Not just stay away from the polls, but go in and register a blank vote.
Yeah, I understand that. See, I mean, the point that I would raise is that, number one, black people, as I know, black people tend to be very, very pragmatic. That black people don't deal in symbolic gestures too much. And that, okay, true, you could vote for Eldridge Cleaver. All right, but you know that Eldridge is not going to win. Number two is that politically, see, I feel that there is a great need to move black people away from the idea that they're going to get any sort of redress of grievances through the ballot box. That it's all a big game, it's all a big joke, and that you cast your vote and the system is going to roll on the same way and no change is going to come about through the vote. All right, I recognize, though, that you know, there are a lot of black folks out there who are going to vote. You know, and they're going to vote Democrat or they're going to vote Republican. And so within that context, you know, I'm sort of helpless. But my motion is not going to get them to vote for, you know, if they're going to vote anyway, okay, then I say vote for Eldridge or vote for Dick Gregory. You know, since you got a vote for Charlene Hunter, who is a black woman running on the Communist Party ticket in some states. You know, you got three black folks on the ballot someplace.
Right.
So at least vote black if you're going to vote. But if you have doubts about whether to vote, then don't vote, because it's white folks playing games. We ain't got time for white folks' games no more.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying...
Mr. Garst, thank you for calling. We have one more call we'd like to take.
Okay.
Thank you so much, sir. We'll take our next call, Mr. Lester from Springfield, Tennessee. I'm sorry, from Memphis, Tennessee. Ms. Springfield is hearing Night Call over WDIA. Ms. Springfield, good evening.
I don't have a question to ask, but I'd just like to challenge the Mr. and the rest of the people across the country who are listening why I believe in black power. I believe in black power because, to me, black power means putting an end to whitey's oppressive acts. I believe in black power because it means getting him out of our black ghettos with exploiting our parents as well as us. I believe in black power because it really and truly means getting Whitey off of my back as well as my other brothers and sisters' thoughts, and keeping him off for good. I believe in Black Power because I am not afraid to stand up and tell any white man anywhere in this whole world that I am tired of him and that I will use any means possible to get him off my back as well as my other brothers and sisters' backs.
Ms. Springfield, thank you for calling. Thank you.
Oh, beautiful.
We've come to that point in our show where we are, unfortunately, we cannot take any more calls. Time has just about run out on us, and while our guest tonight, Mr. Lester, is kind of collecting his thoughts for a closing comment, we'd like to once again remind you that we always welcome your letters, and if you're one of the persons who night after night seemingly can't get through to us, remember you can always write to us. So drop us a note, or drop us a letter, or drop us your questions to Night Call, Pomona, that's P-O-M-O-N-A, Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. Mr. Lester, we have just about 2 minutes. Where do we go from here?
Well, you know, I think where we go from here is in the direction which the young sister who just called from Memphis, you know, stated so very simply, that the revolution is inevitable, I believe, and that it's going to be in the hands of the young people. And when I say young, I'm talking about those who are now 7, 8, 9, and 10, who make me seem like a very old man indeed at age 29. I mean, it's time for me to step aside because they're ready. And I don't know how old she was, but she very definitely stated and sounded like, you know, there was no compromise, there was no turning back, there was no question marks. I mean, there were no question marks or doubts in her mind as what needed to be done if black people were going to get liberation in this country. And that, to my mind, it matters very little if, you know, we destroy this country and die in the process, then I think that we will have done the world a favor. Of course, you know, the most beautiful thing that could happen is that we bring the country down and then can rebuild it on humanistic principles and on principles that admit that that each individual is important. But that if that can't come about, then I'm glad to give the world a gift of the destruction of America.
Mr. Lester, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you.
This is Del Shields in New York, and the results of our straw poll we will not be able to give you tonight, but we will pass it on to you tomorrow night. This is Del Shields once again in New York. Thank you so much for being with us. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, ex-convict Kenny Jackson of the Fortune Society on the problems of rehabilitation. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.